Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is January 11th, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here for another installment of the French Connection. Very important information has been accumulating here on the French Connections website, and I'm hoping that we can get some of you to start working a little harder at getting this stuff out into the mainstream. That means take some of these files we've made, if you would, and begin to pass them around to friends and family who may be aware of some of this information but not be getting it regularly. Because, you know, the only way we're going to get any traction is if you help, because we're not placed on most people's websites. That is an exception to the person we're going to have on the show today. He does link to our site, but most of the other sites do not link to the French Connection because most of the other sites are not interested in the truth, but they are rather interested in the status quo, as far as Eric, myself, and Boleyn and many others have been able to divine. So your help is the only way we're ever going to get this message farther afield, and if you would do that for us, it will make all the difference, because we are a word-of-mouth grassroots project or political movement, as it were. Today's guest has been with us many, many times. We bring him on almost monthly here to talk about the most important issues that we talk about on the French Connection. One of them is the free speech rights. And the work that the Jewish Zionist group is trying to do to stop us from sharing relevant information about what they're doing and about for this guest, his religious views are actually being quashed here in front of the world. It's amazing that Christianity, as long as it's been around with us, is really finding itself up against the wall by Zionist crimes, and it's the crime of free speech is under threat across the United States and across Europe and across Canada and Australia, and I dare say the world, ladies and gentlemen. So what I'm going to do is bring up Reverend Ted Pike right now, and we're going to talk about the latest attempts of these criminals to stop us from sharing free information. Ted, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me again, Daryl.
Well, you know, so often, Ted, we look at this issue, and these people, they seem to want to morph their attempt. They've got little ways of getting little parts of their agenda passed into this bought and paid for a congressional system that we have, and it looks like they're doing it again here with this recent bill being passed about lobbying. It seems to be also an assault on some free speech ability, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does. Actually, we have two really major threats to free speech looming now in the new Democrat-controlled Congress. The first and probably much greater one is the threat that the ADL will reintroduce their federal so-called anti-hate bill. Now, we've discussed this many times on the French Connection and so on, and most people are familiar now with how this basically the same kind of legislation has taken away free speech in Canada and other European countries.
And where I am, actually. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I've been working very, very hard for the last several weeks being proactive and getting literally thousands and thousands of Americans to come to my website, which is truthtellers.org.
Yep.
We have a powerful brochure there called Anti-Hate Laws Will Make You a Criminal. And about 8,000 at least, an estimated 8,000 people, it probably is quite a bit more than that, but I'm being conservative, have downloaded, I should say printed out, that brochure. It's ready to address and send. And we have also at Truth Tellers a list of about 8 to 10 of the influential congressional aides for every member of the new Congress. That is,
yep,
except for the last 55 that were just voted in. Anyway, we are encouraging people to print out that brochure, put a stamp on each one, and write out the name of these influential aides for the members of your congressional delegation in Congress. That means your two senators and your member of your congressman or congresswoman. And that's only about 30 names maximum. It'll cost you about $10. But what you can do, since you have so much political clout, you can send that in there. And when they see your zip code on that brochure, whether it's the staffer or the receptionist or whatever, they'll see that zip code and they'll realize that you're a constituent in their district. In other words, you have the power to not only vote out the boss, you have the power to make unemployed the congressional staffers or legislative aides. And so this brochure is now going in by the thousands to Congress. I'm just encouraging the listeners to the French Connection to join in the fight and come to truthtellers.org and send these by the thousands more into Congress. I believe that we have an opportunity through this powerful, well-documented brochure to go into the very insides of Congress, the inside of the Senate and the House offices, bringing new truth and light about what the hate bill will really do to end free speech in America. You see, these poor people in benighted Washington, they're in a bubble. They're out of touch with reality. They don't know what's happening under hate laws, even as close as Canada. And they have accepted without question the ADL propaganda that's been fed to them, that this big federal hate bill is nothing more than just an honest attempt by the federal government to enforce hate crimes laws in the states and put down violent physical hate crimes in the states. Talk to a staffer, he'll tell you that right off the top. Well, the truth of the matter is that the ADL has always used that argument to persuade gullible legislators that this is an innocuous bill. It'll never go beyond just putting down violent physical hate crimes. And so these legislators vote in these hate crimes laws in Canada, Europe, and even in state legislatures here in the United States, not realizing that in the process of time, the federal judges, the local judges, and so on, will give their own spin to this new legal concept, and they will broaden out these hate crimes laws into laws which actually protect not only the physical safety of homosexuals, but their emotional safety. It will protect them from verbal speech crimes or verbal hate and that damages their sensitive emotions and so on.
Well, you know, we did a show very recently just 2 days ago with Lorraine Day. And Dr. Day talked about the homosexual community's risk of dying, and the facts around being a homosexual are frightening.
Yes.
We're talking about, if you went down the list, I don't remember them off the top of my head, but you're like 20 times more likely to die of a car accident, you're 80 times more likely to die of infection, you die 18 years earlier than the general public, and in other words, to make that lifestyle choice is not just a victimless or a non-self-destructive choice, but rather it's a life-ending choice for people.
Yes.
And when she did the statistical thing, I sat here and I was struck by how damaging that choice of lifestyle is. And no one ever talks about the real facts about making that decision, Ted.
Yes.
And you know, we part company on some of our religious takes on things. However, on the human side of this, when you take a look at how destructive this is to people and it is to their families, you cannot help but be on board with the idea that this needs to be told to everyone. We need to be able to share this. Now, what happens if they make these laws the law of the land? We won't even be able to tell people the truth about that lifestyle choice.
Absolutely. Up in British Columbia right now, the hate laws have become so extreme that a dentist or a medical assistant is not even allowed to put on surgical gloves when they are treating an AIDS patient, lest he should feel intimidated or inferior or part of some kind of diseased minority. And as a result of that, many, many medical staff have contracted AIDS up there, and there are many, many huge lawsuits in the courts as these aggrieved medical people are having to face a premature death because of the misguided so-called idealism of these hate laws.
Well, you know, and here in Europe, There are people, academics, who would like to look into how the history of Europe has molded this century and the last, and are forbidden from looking behind the veil of true of facts that tell us about how Germany actually came to be, and how the certain minority communities were either victimized or not in reality. And they're not able to look into it. And when they do, Ted, they are criminalized for even looking into historical facts.
Yeah, yes, that's right. You see, now that's the way all these hate laws go. They always broaden out. You know, I was on a talk show the other night, and an intelligent young man called, and he said he just talked with Senator Kennedy's office. And evidently they're beginning to reel from all of these powerful brochures that are going to their staffers. And they had a ready answer. They said, oh, that won't happen here in the United States. It won't go into a speech crimes law, she said. These other countries have abused these legitimate hate laws and allowed them to become speech crimes laws that persecute a people for all these ridiculous reasons. Now, that's not true. That shows that they're trying to get an argument against what we're saying, but the fact of the matter is that the track record of hate laws everywhere is that, number one, they're brought in as the ADL walks the halls of Parliament or whatever and says, you know, violent hate crimes are out of control out in the provinces, we need a big federal hate bill, everybody nods and votes it in. Then, out in the provinces, each province begins to modify that new legislation the way they want to, and inevitably the ADL is also out in the provinces widening, persuading them to broaden it into a speech crime bill.
Well, you know, here's another thing. I mean, and this was where it affects the truth truth community looking into 9/11. All roads lead back to a cabal of criminals behind Silverstein, and they happen to be from a specific group, and that's a fact. And as you look into it, you start making these connections and say, well, you know, why is Lauder involved and Ledeen and Wormser and Negroponte, and they're all from the same group? If these laws are passed, we're not going to be able to identify the people who committed these crimes. They'll charge us with a crime for identifying them.
Absolutely. 10 years from now, if this hate bill is passed, it will unite the world into a federally, internationally enforced hate crimes bureaucracy, and it will be as illegal to doubt the official version of 9/11 as it is now illegal to doubt the official version of the Holocaust 6 million figure.
That's right.
Mark that down as a prediction from
Ted. It's not a prediction. It's a sure bet. This is why we keep harping on this because look, we will never be able to get justice underway if this passes. This is really the death nail for our attempts at justice.
Then that's right. You see, if we don't have free speech, then we can't protest, then we can't march, then we can't write editorials, then we can't reprove in public and criticize other identifiable groups, and we can't criticize the government or call even for rebellion against the government. All of that becomes illegal, and so by definition, all of our other rights go down the drain.
That's right. Well, you know, here's something I do want to bring up with you. I mean, 9/11 is a watershed event in that because I think it's because the internet exists. For the first time, what started out as a rumor and then ultimately became provable is now into the mainstream. And what we've got is a fight going on, a pitched battle between people who know the facts and people who are needing to know them. And what we also see is a plan here to try and pit Christendom or Christianity against the Muslims, and who will be left standing in the end are these in-betweeners here, this group that I just talked about, Negroponte, Wormser, and everything, goes back to Zionists.
That's right.
And they're trying to take two great world religions who may or may not see things the same way, but based on a lie, they're trying to structure a fight between these two groups, Ted.
That's right. Well, it's kind of a rehash of the ancient medieval crusades, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The Christians and the evangelicals and their version of Richard Lionhearted, the Lionhearted, which is George Bush, going off, marching off by the millions to supposedly free the Mideast from a Muslim control. And it's a great distraction. It's an unnecessary adventure we have in the Middle East right now. It's obviously, the whole purpose of it is to make the Mideast safe for Israel and Israel's continued expansionism in the whole region. So, but you see, what hate laws do is that they make all of these so-called conspiracy theories about, you know, international Zionist conspiracy, Jewish control of Congress through AIPAC, Jewish control of the media, it makes all that into anti-Semitism. And in Canada today, you cannot make these assertions in public. You can't even make them on the street corner, let alone on broadcasting, because that's considered holding up a federally protected group to hatred or contempt that is punishable under Section 319 of the federal code. Your initial fine could be anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for making that, and if you continue to make such statements, you would certainly go to prison.
And this, yeah, they are pumping in a lot of money, effort, and lobbying time, and now they're even rewriting bills so that portions of this gets slipped under the dork, so to speak, so that they can get portions of it already underway. And it looks like this lobbying bill had some of those components in it. You want to describe some of the things they've got in that?
Yes. You know, about a year ago, there was quite a reaction from the religious conservative right against what's called lobbying reform legislation. And, of course, there's a need for this because the Abramoff scandals and so on. By the way, there you see a Jewish provocation which creates another false solution.
Yeah.
And anyway, there is a need for lobby reform, obviously, and the Republicans and Democrats are battling it out right now as we speak on the House, the floor of the Senate. They're scheduled even to vote on the lobby reform bill, which is S1 of the Legislative Transparency and Accountability Act of 2007. What was the problem last year, and Dr. James Dobson and a lot of New Right leaders were very worried about this, was that there were provisions in this lobby reform bill that Senator McCain never had any intention of introducing. A senator...
Or did he? Or didn't he? Maybe.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
What Senator Carl Levin and Joe Lieberman, which are both Jewish activists, did was they introduced new sections into this. They stuck it in at the last moment, and it has provisions which are extremely oppressive upon what are called grassroots lobbyist firms. And this legislation, the present form of this legislation is Section 220, which is, as I say, ready for passage in the Senate as we speak. But what it does is Lieberman and Levin say that anybody who even calls the government, makes one call a year to the government with their opinions about the national policy, is now a citizen or a grassroots lobbyist. And if that person or that organization receives as much as $25,000 per quarter every 3 months in order to promote some kind of point of view to the government, they become a registered paid lobbyist firm, a grassroots lobbyist firm. And when they do that, then they have to file with the government every three months a very detailed resume and accounting of how much money was given to them, how it was spent, who was who dispersed the money, all kinds of details. And if they have members, and there are very loose definitions of what a member is. According to the government in this bill, if somebody gives a few dollars to your organization, he becomes a member. If a person gives a few hours of time to your organization, he becomes a member of your organization, and that lobbyist firm then is obligated to the government to keep track of how its members disperse the monies, that $25,000 every 3 months, to promote a research on this issue, or a interactive website, or calls to Washington or things like that, all these members now have to be overseen by the head of that so-called grassroots lobbying firm, you see. Now, obviously what this is an attempt by Levin and Lieberman to impose crushing paperwork requirements upon especially small Christian conservative organizations. You know, those who lobby against abortion, those who lobby against same-sex marriages or stem cell research, on and on. There are hundreds, there are thousands of these tiny, cash-strapped lobbyist organizations, and the ADL and Levin and Lieberman do not like these activist groups out there influencing Congress. You know, in the last 2 years, we're kind of a small group that lets our voice be known, and we might be considered such an organization, although we can't make claims financially like that. But what happens is that if this kind of paperwork descends upon us, many of these organizations will simply have to fold up. And not only that, but if you have a church, let's say you have an evangelical church which is politically oriented, and there are, of course, thousands of those lobbying Congress in one way or another and receiving very large sums of donations for that very purpose, those churches will be in the hot seat now. Number one, they will have all of these onerous reporting restrictions that requirements that have to be met every 3 months, and also the people in these congregations have to be reported concerning what they are doing with this money. And furthermore, there's a $100,000 fine on these tiny churches and organizations if they do not make their quarterly reports on time or information in them is inaccurate.
Now, didn't they put together a complex exemption for the AIPAC people?
Here's the contradiction. This legislation makes it very clear that if you're a lobbyist in some big high-rolling trade union or a huge PAC or so on, where you have lots of money, you have lots of secretaries, lots of accountants and bookkeepers, then those organizations are perfectly free to lobby to the limit all of their many thousands of members, trade union members, and so on, and there's no restrictions put on them. But this heavy restriction is descending on typically new right conservative organizations, lobbying organizations, down at the grassroots level. Now, let me ask, have you heard lots of scandals lately about these tiny little pro-life organizations and their lobbying efforts? Have you heard how they're abusing their privileges?
No.
And it's high time that they were...
The only one I'm hearing about abusing anything is AIPAC.
Yeah. And here's Levin and Lieberman. They're creating a problem. They're viewing these little tiny groups with tremendous suspicion, saying if we don't regulate them now and put these crushing paperwork restrictions on them, you know, who knows what kind of abuses and graft they'll be involved in. Well, there is no record of that ever happening in the history of free speech in America.
Well, Ted, you know, here's the interesting thing about Levin. He is eyeball deep in 9/11's cover-up and the groundwork of it, along with Rahm Emanuel and others. And we've done research on these people, and the fact is Levin, Leibowitz, and the rest of them are I'm telling you, they're in the pockets of these people so badly,
yes,
that America risks losing everything to these people. I'm telling you, they do.
That's right. Well, the fact of the matter is that the lobby reform bill, as first proposed by McCain, was fairly straightforward, and of course, it's imperfect, and there are many critics of what McCain had in mind. However, what Lieberman and Levin have inserted would be absolutely demoralizing to the Christian conservative right-wing patriotic movement as established basically by Ronald Reagan. And I would foresee that if this is imposed on basically evangelical Christian America, there will be many churches which would decide that it wasn't worth the pain and the hassle to try to keep up with the requirements of the federal government. And there'd be a lot of congregational members who'd say, hey, I can't be associated with a church that's in danger every quarter of being fined $100,000 if they don't have every jot and tittle right. You know, I can't be involved with that because I'd probably have to be required by the church to pay part of the tab. That's certainly what's happened with the Catholic Church with these pedophile lawsuits. If they stay in the church, they've got to cough up big money for these multi-million dollar judgments. So the whole overall effect of this Section 220 of the S1, which is the lobbying, the Legislative Transparency and Accountability Act, the lobby reform bill, is to impose a tremendous repression, persecution, upon what really was the product of the Reagan Revolution. You see, before the Reagan Revolution in 1980, the churches said, well, we better stay out of politics, you know, because it's messy business. It's the devil's business. We'll just let the liberals run the country. And then Reagan came along and he invited all the evangelicals in, including us with the National Prayer Network. He invited us by proclaiming the National Day of Prayer, which was basically the brainchild of my father to reinvigorate that as a national institution. Anyway, he invited all these evangelicals in and said, you can have an important role in reshaping the government and in forging a new revival of Americanism for the future.
But I have to tell you, Ted, that invitation was abused by some of the people. Look at Hagee and look at Pat Robertson. I mean, these people, they actually on their programming call for assassination, for murder, for criminality. I mean, and what they've done is they've taken what sounds on the surface to be innocuous and undamaging, and they've turned it into an abomination.
Yeah, and what's happened here is, as we all well know, is that these neocon Jewish elitists and Jewish activists have gotten into the right, new right. They've penetrated the new right, and they have whipped up the new right to become actually the advocates of military adventurism on behalf of Israel now in the Middle East. And as a result of that very bad advice to our government provided by the evangelicals and Hagee and Falwell and Robertson and so on, now the whole evangelical right-wing movement is coming into tremendous discredit. People are saying, well, so much for the good advice of the religious Christians. You know, we might as well go back to the Democrats and have some realism about what's happening to the world and to the Middle East. And so the whole, it kind of looks like we are entering in another cycle. I regret to say that, but the cycle of conservative activism through Reagan is now down, moving down in the pendulum of fate and so on, as the Democrats are now back in control of Congress. And basically you're saying, look what the religious right did in taking us into disaster in the Middle East. Let's get out of the Middle East, and you'd be much better advised to follow liberals and Democrats now instead of Christians.
So we can all become good communists.
Yeah, that's right. And this legislation, this lobby reform bill in Section 220, hastens along this mentality. It says basically to Christians, you know, you better just preach the gospel and mind your own business and let the liberals run the country. I should say wreck the country as they did under the New Deal and before that.
You know as well as I do, Ted, that right-left Republican-Democrat argument is a lie, because behind both of these groups are the same controllers.
Well, that's certainly true. You know, Ken Mellman is Jewish, and he's head of the Republican National Committee. But on the other hand, the fact of the matter is, concerning this hate bill, that critical Republican leadership did hold it back since 1998. There were people there with at least some vestige of conscience. Many of these are Israel firsters, granted, but they didn't want the hate bill. They knew what was in the hate bill, and certainly Senator Frist, imperfect as he may be, stood in the breach and kept the hate bill from becoming law, even as late as a month ago to the end of the 109th Congress. Certainly Roy Blunt of Missouri, as head of the House Majority Whip's office, was responsible for choosing Republican conferees who repeatedly stripped out the hate bill, even after it was passed in conference between the House and the Senate. So those people are not there anymore. That's what is so dangerous right now, and that's why what I'm doing is I am being preemptive. I do not want the hate bill to get in, even in the committee in the Senate. What I want to do is to let the ADL know in no uncertain terms, long before they have the nerve to enter that bill, that there's going to be a howl of protest from the American people, and that already their staffers are saturated with my hate bill, telling what ADL has done in taking away free speech in many countries of the world.
Well, you know, and Ted, this is what I see happening here. I mean, they know that the American public is awakening to the facts, and it's pretty clear if you're spending any time on the net or even in mainstream articles these days, it's starting to be outed that Israel is Israel firsters, Israel and the Jewish lobby are responsible for a destruction of America unprecedented in our history, and in fact responsible for fomenting hatred, murder, and destruction worldwide.
Yes.
And this is becoming the truth about this little sick little example of a country in the Middle East at this time. Now, whether or not someday Israel has a right to reform itself under a messianic structure of Christianity or other things is immaterial to the fact that right now it is under the control of evil criminals.
Yes, it is. And you know, this hate bill issue is a kind of a transitional issue, and it's a blessing in disguise, really, because what we saw a little over 2 years ago was that the ADL was directly responsible for arresting and imprisoning those 11 Christians in Philadelphia.
Yep. Yep.
And Lynn Abraham was there very conspicuously as the district attorney of Philadelphia, a national executive board member of the ADL. This was clearly ADL revenge on the evangelical right for helping defeat their federal hate bill just on the previous Friday. And fortunately, I was able to get on your program and many other programs, really, really dramatizing that to the world and the church. And what it did was it introduced a brand new idea to many evangelical Christians. That is that the evangelicals may love the Jewish leaders, but those Jewish activists and leaders emphatically do not love the Christians, and they really would like to persecute the Christians very ruthlessly, as Lynn Abraham did. Now that began to put a wedge between the evangelicals and the Jewish leaders, whom they really believed could do no wrong, and they were the apple of God's eye and beyond criticism and so on.
Are you seeing a migration? Oh, I'm seeing it. I'm sure because you're closer to this community, but I'm seeing a migration of evangelicals away from them right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am seeing more signs now of awareness of this than ever. You know,
Ted, the biggest sign I see is it used to be a badge of intellectual honor for these evangelicals to say that they believed in Zionism.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you today, the word Zionism, is its connotation is not a positive one, but rather one of supremacy, of criminality, of warmongering, of criminality from the Israeli military, and you know, they have bolstered this opinion through their actions in Lebanon and what they're trying to do now in Iran, and the fact that they've come out and said they've got nuclear weapons, and all of this stuff is starting to be surfaced, and people they're becoming reluctant to say, yes, I'm a Zionist.
That's right. Well, it's really a new day for us, Daryl. I have never experienced such real freedom of speech to tell the whole truth to the whole world as we are experiencing right now. And a good example of that is what's going on at Google, which I understand is Jewish-owned, but they are forced, you know, they have to live down this bad reputation they had of censoring internet truth to the people of China and other parts of the world. And now they've got the privilege of people putting up these conspiracy theory videos on Google by the dozens and so on. And my videos, my four major videos are there on Google. We're approaching 70,000 people have watched these videos. And this is unprecedented to have an international forum where the whole truth can be spoken without reservation.
Well, they're actually censoring our work. Google is.
Well, I know they are. I know they've drastically cut you down as far as contacts on
from 270,000 to 23,000.
Yeah. Well, all I know is I'm still up on Google, and people are coming about 400-600 a day to watch my videos there on Google. It's the whole truth, and I mean that adds up when you have even 70,000 people who have watched these videos and know the whole score backwards and forwards. That's got to begin to impact the general thinking of the American people. And so,
well, Ted, we know the biggest thing that Eric and I have noticed that, you know, we were screaming this. So you and I, you myself, Eric and Bolin and a few others, a year and a half ago, were out in the wilderness screaming at the top of our lungs, take a look at this, take a look at this. And everybody, I can tell you without question, everybody said we were mad as hatters.
Yeah.
And the things we were talking about were anti-Semitic, anti-this, anti-that. We were just telling the truth. And you know what? Today's a new day. You're saying it. People are finally warming up to the reality here.
Yes. And what we have is clout now to influence literally every aspect of our society concerning the whole truth. Behind who is the eye of this octopus, which is ADL, the Neighborhood International, and so on.
Yeah.
And just between you and me on international radio, I'm just starting to promote the dissemination of especially my hate crimes brochure around the world. I want to begin a campaign in a few weeks to encourage people to send this brochure not just to congressional aides and members of Congress, but literally to every aspect, every opinion maker in our society, legislators on the local level, police, Justice Department people, governors, attorney generals in the states, and so on.
But you know something, Ted, you don't know this, that over 40% of our listenership is from outside the United States.
Yes, well.
And you're making a plea now to a worldwide audience.
That's right, and in fact, I am going to be on British talk radio next week. I'll probably make an announcement about that, and they're saying they need our influence over there, and they want to popularize my message in Britain. So there's a real chance that this truth can go out so widely that the ADL will be challenged, even in Canada, even in Britain, to pull back and modify the hate laws and ideally to rescind them altogether. And I believe we have to work toward that goal eventually here in the United States to defang, if you will, the hate laws here on the local level in the states, take out the provisions in the anti-intimidation laws which the ADL got in the 1990s, so that the ADL can't use those state laws against those who speak out in America.
Well, you know, and one of the things that's happened as this truth has gotten more airplay and more traction both internationally and at home, we've started to see who's willing and who's unwilling to share this message. And you also have. We talked about it earlier. When we were working together with Chris Bolin and Eric, of course you know Eric from many broadcasts we've done together, we were putting out factual information about a lot of different conspiracies that we had proof of. And we weren't getting traction on a couple of the main publications who claimed they were being truthful. And in fact, some of the work that we had done, like Eric's video, was actually banned from a newspaper that was getting wide circulation. And what we found out was, and we after an investigation and after Christopher Bolin's work was being completely censored, that this place was not interested in getting factual information out, but rather to contain the story in some ways rather than get it out. And what they were doing is retreading information that had already been in the public realm, but never working to get any new information to add to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that sad fact put us in a bind because they were claiming to have the truth on their side, and what they were doing is suppressing it.
Yeah.
And you were actually marginalized by American Free Press for your work. You used to be able to get some of the work on with Willis Cardo, and now he won't even grace you with his response. And I'm wondering, when we take a look at these kinds of things, Ted, that's not the only place where we've experienced this.
Well, I don't know the full circumstances. I have implored American Free Press to give real priority to the hate crimes issue, and to put that up on the front page as a top priority to save free speech in America. Now, I'm not criticizing Willis Carto on this program because I don't. All I'm saying is the American Free Press has, for some reason, not gotten underneath this tremendous threat to freedom in America, and certainly they receive all of my email alerts and so on, but it's been years literally since I have been able to publish an article in American Free Press warning about the hate bill threat. Now, all I'm saying is that they are not covering that. Now
Jim, well, from our acts, you will know us. From our deeds, you will know us.
Well, Jim Tucker has written some good articles covering Congress, and he has played an important role with me in alerting the readers of American Free Press in the past. And I certainly implore Jim to get under this more than ever right now and give this top priority, because obviously the people of American Free Press know that they will. They will lose their First Amendment rights if this bill goes in, and American Free Press will not be able to speak even the amount of truth they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Collins Piper has played a wonderful role in previewing, I should say reviewing my videos and my books over the years, and I'm really eternally.
But are they selling them on their site?
Well, I don't expect them to do that, but all I'm saying is that, I would plead with American Free Press. They have a large constituency of probably 100,000 people.
Not even close.
Is not even
half that.
Okay, well, I'm talking about maybe 65,000 subscriptions, and then two or three people read the newspaper. But what I'm saying is, we all have to work together now to defeat the hate bill. We cannot have sections of the conservative far-right movement kind of remaining incomprehending of the tremendous crisis that's before us. I'm not going to sit in judgment upon American Free Press.
I'm not asking you to talk about things you don't know. I'm asking here to say that we're not getting, you're not getting help from them, which
has to change, because this is such a staggeringly huge issue. And
we're telling you though, Ted, that's not a mistake, is my point.
Well, I have to do is I have to kind of go through a middle road here between various controversies and conflicts between various groups in the far right. My philosophy on this, Daryl, is that anybody who is speaking anything resembling the whole truth about Zionism and the Zionist lobby and so on is a valuable, very valuable resource, is a national treasure, and I can't personally enter into conflict with them. But
what if you were to discover something, though, Ted, that we were trying, they were trying to, not they, but not in the American Free Press, but anyone was trying to marry these factual evidences that we are bringing forward with Nazism, and trying to marry it with white supremacy extremism,
so that
the ultimate goal could be that they could discredit all of our work.
Yeah. Well,
what if you were to find that out?
Yeah. What I have to do right now, Daryl, quite frankly, is I just kind of have to jump from stone to stone, and American Free Press is 100,000 people who need to hear this truth. Other groups are 50,000, and there's maybe 20,000 downloads with you and 20,000 with another person and so on. What I have to do is just kind of stay out of controversy with people I disapprove of, or I'm suspicious of, or whatever, and I have to go on every talk show that will invite me on, and if somebody's feuding with another person, I can't.
Oh no! This is not about feuding. We're just bringing out factual.
Well, sure. I'm not denying that. It's just that I am not free right now to. All I have to do is say, how many people can I get the truth out in this venue and that venue and that venue? And
we did talk about a guy named Reverend Butler in our private conversation.
Uh-huh.
Now this is one of the ways that the Christian community has been discredited. They've used a gentleman. He's not around anymore. He's not with us anymore. He's actually died some time ago. But his relationship to neo-Nazism and white only cause, which to me is an illness. This gentleman is actually being touted as a good Christian. Now, how could you call yourself a good Christian and try to exclude 70% of the world's population based on their race?
Yeah. Well, I find
that these links to be offensive in the extreme.
I have spoken out very specifically, like you have, against racism. And what I define racism is the belief that Jews, because of their heredity, that is their genetics, are racially degenerate, corruptive, subversive, and so on. I believe this is basically what Hitler believed, and thought that he had a right to persecute them, and so on. And I speak out against that, and I'm quite criticized by these groups for betraying them, especially there are large sections of the Christian identity movement which do believe that Jews are literally the seed of Satan, the genetic result of copulation between demons and ancient perverse individuals who began degenerate, wicked, satanic seeds of people.
I find that to be so foolish, it's laughable.
Yeah, and I have made it very clear, I do not believe that, I reject that, and yet a lot of these people, they receive a very great deal of the truth I say, and they call into Congress, they cooperate with me, and so on. So what I do is I make my position clear. I make my position clear, but I do not necessarily, in my opinion, try to go out and take these people on. And I think the same thing would be said of American Free Press. I'm making my position clear that we need articles out of American Free Press which are sounding the alarm about the federal hate bill, the imminent introduction of the federal hate bill. And we need a consistent program of education out of American Free Press about hate crimes philosophy and errors and perversions and all that kind of thing. And that has been way, way on the back burner for so many years now that I'm concerned about it. And as recently as I mentioned to you on the phone, I did call Willis and ask, can we have some lead articles about getting the readers of American Free Press active and motivated, because you have a tremendous voice to speak to them and galvanize action. And I just hope that this will change with American Free Press, because the old spotlight newspaper was always a bastion of truth. And before the internet, and before online credit card sales of my videos and so on, I depended upon the American Free Press, and they were there. And Michael Piper was there to give stellar reviews of.
Well, how many of you sold through them lately?
Well, I sold about 12,000 of my other Israel video originally.
And how many this year?
Well, actually, I pretty much exhausted the market in American Free Press by selling tens of thousands of videos through that constituency. So you haven't
sold any for them?
Well, I haven't attempted to. I haven't been advertising or even attempting, because new venues through the internet largely and my writings and so on have performed that function. But I believe this is an exhortation, American Free Press, to join with us and get on the bandwagon of driving the ADL out of Congress and their hate crimes agenda by especially right now. Bringing people to truth tellers and having them copy not only the hate crimes brochure and having that sent to the many, many, many staff members in Congress, but also our new brochure. We have a brochure now at Truth Tellers which is just up this morning. It's called The Lobby Reform Bill, An Attack on Grassroots Freedom. And I would encourage our listeners to come to Truth Tellers and not only print out the hate crimes brochure, but to print out this lobby reform brochure because you see, we may be late here in the Senate, but the fact is that the House has not deliberated this new section version of its Section 220 restrictions on grassroots lobbyists. It's still flexible there, and we could saturate the Senate and the House, aides especially, with thousands and thousands of this brochure on the lobby reform bill, attack on grassroots freedom. And I'm imploring all Christian conservative organizations to do the same, because I believe we have an excellent chance of bringing so much truth and light into the darkened hall of Congress that we can defeat not only the hate bill, but we can defeat the lobby reform provisions of Section 220.
Well, you know, Ted, this battle that we're both involved in here is heating up, and it looks like to me that we're going to be doing something rather desperate in Iran soon, and I hope that's not true, but all indications are that it is. And of course, we've got young men going over there, some of them being lied to get there, and others forced to, and of course, the biggest crime we've committed over the last 10 years as Americans is that we've killed almost 600,000 Iraqi citizens for a lie. And not only that, took part in starving their country out of over 1.5 million back in the early 90s. Yeah. So we're talking 2 million people have died at the hands of the American military on the orders of these criminals. And I can't imagine that the rest of the country could ever I tell you, we should not be forgiven for this.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's an unforgivable act that we've committed.
I think a key to turning America around is to turn around the 25 million or so Christian evangelicals, and I'm seeing signs that is beginning to happen. I have a friend who's a columnist, a writer, has been for a large conservative Christian organization, and he has sent my brochure by email to 2,000 key Christian leaders and activists in this country with favorable responses from them. And also I got a call from a major Christian conservative organization this week commending me for what I'm doing. I'm seeing some signs that the ice is breaking up here a bit. And this hate crimes issue, especially the lobby reform issue, these are wonderful transition issues. You see, in this lobby reform article or brochure, which I have, I call attention to this Lieberman and Levin. It's these Jewish activists who are again and again being found to be the culprits behind legislation and lobbying and actions which are against the best wishes, the best interests of the American people.
Yeah.
And so this, I am hammering away, pointing basically.
You ought to add Rahm Emanuel into that mix.
Okay.
His, you know, Father Ergun and you know, actually a terrorist, proven to be a terrorist. I mean, the guy owns the controls behind the scenes of the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he certainly should be on the top of that list along with Levin and Lieberman.
Yes, that's right. But it's gradually soaking in among many of these evangelicals and their leaders that Ted Pike does have a real case here. There's something wrong, and the course corrections are going to have to be made in the attitudes of the religious right to Israel and into Jewish activism and so on. And what I'd like to do, as I do with all of these groups, is I would like to not get into butting heads with them, but to gradually lead them to a more enlightened point of view and save their honor and save their pride and let them begin to fight the hate bill and fight the Jewish lobby and so on along with us. I believe there can be a transition here as a new and more mature attitude toward Israel and to Judaism begins to be developed by evangelicals.
Well, I'm starting to get a breakup in our signal, so I'm going to call this an interview. I'd like you to try one more time to give out your details so people can do these this downloading and this mailing, if you would do that, Ted.
Yes. Come to www.truthtellers.org. We have two dynamic brochures there, one on the hate laws, one on the lobby reform bill. Print out both of those. They're both worthy of a real devotion of your time in the weeks ahead. We have a program there of you can get the address of an average of 8 to 10 of the legislative aides for every member of Congress in your district. We want people to send out about 30 of the hate crimes brochures and about 30 of the lobby reform brochure to these aides in Congress. And I believe that we can generate a tremendous amount of dissatisfaction and discussion there in Congress, which could very well prevent these evil bills from ever being legislated.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing this up to the attention of my listeners once again. This is, you know, and many people might say, well, we're going back over old work here, but that's not true. The information that we bring forward today is actually a bit different. And again, I want to point out the fact that this lobbying bill is not quite as the same, but many of the same restrictions on free speech are trying to get passed in different ways. And, you know, once the ADL gets outed on a single method, they morph themselves into a new way to take our freedom.
That's right. And the precedent of forcing local Christian conservative lobbyists to ask permission from the federal government to inform their members and inform the public, that is certainly the most blatant violation of the First Amendment.
Well, Ted, again, you know, being on my show, you're always welcome here to try and share your evidence and truth about these facts. And I tell you, we're less alone than we were 18 months ago, that's for sure. And I can feel the groundswell in America starting, and in the world. I mean, like I said, 40% of my listenership's coming from outside the country. The world is waking up to the crimes of this group, and for the first time in history, I believe we have a chance to actually reverse their lock control on our lives. And if that is done, Ted, you know, the freedom is contingent upon people being aware that their freedoms are being lost.
Yes.
And unless, you know, see, most people are there running around trying to pay that credit card bill or be entertained by, on some bizarre entertainment that's been constructed by these people, by Zionist Jews in Hollywood or wherever. The fact is that once we get these folks out of the way, there's going to be all kinds of room for qualitative debate on so many new issues that this is really the only the beginning, not the end.
Yes. Well, it's very important that those who are in leadership over this burgeoning movement be balanced and moderate, and because historically, once people catch on to the conspiracy of evil Jewish leaders, they tend to take things to extreme and become fanatical. And then, of course, these leaders manipulate that to their disadvantage and create their own mythologies out of that. That certainly has happened throughout the centuries. So this is a time where we have to be documented, level-headed, moderate, and so on. And I'm trying to provide that kind of guidance at the National Prayer Network.
Well, thank you so much, Ted, for coming on the show once again. You know, we'll be inviting you back soon, as usual. And maybe we'll have an add-on subject to bring up next time. But it was wonderful to have you here, and I thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Daryl.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Reverend Ted Pike, my friend, and I work closely with Ted's effort to try and keep our right to free speech alive. But until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying be well. Bye-bye.